Why you are busy enjoying your lunch, why you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening, we ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and to all our faithful listeners joining us from across the region and across the borders of Namibia. Welcome to Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are tuned into On the Reading News Analysis this Wednesday, the 13th of May, 2026. Your trusted platform for informed discussion and critical thinking and deeper insight into the stories shaping Namibia today. Now, as the country continues a busy week of economic, political and social activity, we once again focus on the issues influencing governance, business, investment, service delivery and the everyday realities facing communities across the nation. Now, this afternoon on the radar, we examine the developments making headlines and driving national conversation, from economic growth and infrastructure investment to entrepreneurship, digital transformation, education, governance, and opportunities for young Namibians. Today's program explores the challenges facing many sectors in trade, and also we'll take a highlight at the ongoing Second Namibia EU Business Forum currently underway in Windhoek. Now, the higher level forum has brought together policymakers, investors and business leaders from Namibia and the European Union in order to discuss green industrialization, renewable hydrogen, sustainable trade and investment opportunities aimed at strengthening economic cooperation between the two partners. And as always, we go beyond the headlines to ask the important questions on what is driving the decisions being made today, how do those developments affect ordinary Namibians, and what they actually mean for the country's long-term growth, sustainability and development. Now, right here on the Reader, we believe informed citizens develop stronger society. That is why we do more than just simply reporting events. We provide context, encourage dialogue, and create space for meaningful national engagement. So every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we bring you informed analysis, expert perspectives, archived sound, and your voice within the conversation. Because in a world overflowing with information, understanding remains essential. And you can listen to us via all Eagle FM, via the Eagle FM frequencies, streamers, via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app. And also do stay connected through our digital platforms, such as the WhatsApp channel for updates, discussions, and exclusive content. So wherever you are this afternoon, at work, on campus, on the road, or just navigating through life, listening from diaspora, thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of conversations. Now let's get right into today's discussions. We started with some indicators. Namibia's Consumer Price Index Bulletin for April 2026, NSA, or the Namibia Statistics Agency, has released this latest statistic bulletins. Now, major division contributions to the annual inflation rate for the month of April 2026, the main contributors to the 3.1 annual inflation rate for April 2026 were housing, water, electricity, gas and other fuels, which contributed 1.1 percentage points, followed by transport contributing 0.7 percentage, food and non-alcoholic beverages contributing 0.4 percentage points, and alcoholic beverages and tobacco contributing 0.3 percentage points. The month of April saw the highest annual inflation rates recorded by the following divisions: transport standing in at 5.0%, hotels, cafes and restaurants at 4.9%, health at 4.8%, housing, water, electricity, gas and other fuels at 4.4%, recreation and culture at 3.8%, and furnishing, household equipment and routine maintenance of the house at 3.1%. Additionally, while communication recorded a 1.3% deflation, other divisions reported inflation. Major divisions' annual inflation rates for housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels: the housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels component, which accounts for 28.4% of the consumer basket, recorded an annual inflation rate of 4.4%. That is in April 2026, up from 4.1% in April 2025, and thereby reflecting a 0.3 percentage point increase over this period. Now, the analysis shows that prices are rising faster than they did in April 2025. And obviously, we can also attribute that to recent global tensions in the oil sector. Now, the increase in this annual inflation for this category was mainly driven by rising prices in the subcomponent electricity, gas and other fuels, which rose by 2.5 percentage point from 1.5% to 4.0%, and rental payments for dwellings, that is owners and renters, which increased from 4.6% to 4.7%. Now, on a monthly basis, the category recorded an inflation rate of 0.1%, the same as in the previous month. Alcoholic beverages and tobacco: the annual inflation rate for alcoholic beverages and tobacco, which constitutes 12.6% of the consumer basket, stood at 1.8% in April 2026. That is down from 4.9% recorded in the corresponding period last year, an indication that prices for alcoholic beverages and tobacco rose, but at a much slower rate compared to the strong growth recorded in April 2025. Now, the goods and services inflation rate, the annual inflation rate for goods, stood at 2.8% during the review period, that is April 2026, down from 3.2% recorded in the same month of the preceding year. Meanwhile, the annual inflation rate for services was 3.6% compared to 4.2% observed in the previous year. And this analysis shows that the goods inflation fell below the national average of 3.1%, while the 4.8% services inflation was responsible for the upward pressure on the average inflation rate.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released its latest inflation bulletin, that is for the month of April 2026, whereby the annual inflation rate stood at 3.1% compared to 3.6% recorded in April 2025. On a monthly basis, inflation was 1.1%, up from 0.2% in the previous month. Core inflation stood at 2.8%, slightly below the headline inflation rate. Looking at the zonal inflation rates for April 2026 indicated that Zone 2, which is Commerce Region, recorded the highest annual inflation rate at 4.2%, followed by Zone 3, which is Karas, Erongo, Hartab and Omaheke at 2.9%. Zone 1, Kavango East, Kavango West, Kunene, Oangwena, Omsati, Oshana, Oshkoto, Oshodonjupa and Zambezi recorded the lowest annual inflation rate at 2.1%. An analysis of average retail prices for selected products revealed that consumers in Zone 3 paid the highest price for pure sunflower oil at 750 milliliters at $34.30, followed by Zone 2 at $33.60, while Zone 1 consumers paid the lowest price at $32.36. Moreover, Zone 1 consumers paid the highest price for diesel per liter at $24.31, followed by Zone 3 at $24.30, while Zone 2 consumers paid the lowest price for diesel per liter at $24.12.
And with that, let's pause here for now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll definitely be back with more news. Do stay tuned.
Lipura nengelo wapungwa eva tere ulikoni mandu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete ofoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendite nawa nukumona oijabu ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko mderewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Welcome back. Now in other news, Mobile Telecommunications Limited, MTC, and the National Housing Enterprise, NHE, signed a memorandum of understanding earlier yesterday. That the MOU includes the installation of internet fiber connections in houses built by NHE in order to allow easier access to technology. NHE CEO Gisbertus Mukuru stated that we are now living in a technologically driven society and most of our young people are technologically savvy. He added that the partnership will ensure that the houses built by NHE are equipped with the necessary fiber infrastructure for young people to stay connected to the internet at all times. Now, my colleague David Shombe got up with Chief Commercial Officer for MTC, Octavius Kahir. Let's take a listen to that conversation.
Yeah, we are moving forward with On the Radar News Bulletin, and I'm joined by the Chief Commercial Officer from MTC, especially just to give us a briefing of what have happened, particularly today when MTC Namibia have signed a memorandum of understanding with NHE, particularly looking at the relationship between National Housing, housing company in Namibia, and also a telecommunication institution, and also to say what are they speaking about and what is entailed into the memorandum of understanding and what can Namibia get from that context. Mr. Kahir, good afternoon, and how are you doing today?
Good afternoon.
Let's look at the short briefing of what have happened today. It's a bit unique to see, a telecommunication company and also a Namibia housing company coming up together and forming a memorandum of understanding. What is the context of that memorandum of understanding?
Today is indeed a momentous occasion whereby the NHE, which has been at the forefront of providing affordable housing for Namibians, has come into an agreement with MTC MTC has been at the forefront of providing access to technology, especially internet technology, and keeping Namibians connected. Now, this agreement is important because it entails that all future housing that the NHA will build will be digitally ready. We are now living in the digital era where internet access is now like a utility, more like your electricity to the house or your water to the house. It has become such a necessity. In this regard, the NHE found it necessary that all future housing is digitally ready with internet passing by the curb of the house that they built. The homes that we have now have been transformed. They are no longer a place to go and sleep and rest. They are now a classroom through technology. They are now a theater for those who do content. They are now a church for those who want to worship. All that is enabled through technology. Our homes are now multifaceted areas of activity, and that has been enabled by technology. And we are happy that the energy realized that need, and we hope that from now on all the homes that are built will be ready for the future. These are not just homes. They are homes built for the future, built with the recognition that the digital world is now upon us.
No, it's a very interesting thing that you indicated that the houses now, they become offices and also place of operation. Now, let us look at the effectiveness of the Memorandum of Understanding. It was signed today. Are you indicating that from now on, any housing project or any house that is going to be built by NHC is going to have a fiber that recipient of that house will be either connected to internet or have access to internet connection? Is that an indication?
That's indeed the indication. The planning now will be joint planning. A housing project involves building of roads, laying out of water pipes, sewage pipes, and electricity. Internet and fiber will become one of those utilities built natively instead of building after. You'll see that for all older homes, it's built after. This will be built natively, and you will have what we call in telecommunications a home pass. That means a fiber is passing by the front of your yard, and with time, all you have to do is then to get connected. And that's why we say fiber ready and future ready.
Okay, now the last question is regarding the, you know, there's always a question of inclusivity, particularly the downtrodden. In your agreement, do you have, I don't want to say standard differentiation to say, even a basic house, particularly to those who cannot afford, what level of inclusion have you entailed, particularly to those with low income in this agreement?
So affordability has been one of our mantra, and we have always planned ensure that there's affordability. So our packages, we have various packages. They come in different forms and sizes to suit anyone who is who qualifies for a house under NHE schemes. So that actually we actually have ensured, and that is quite important to us to provide affordable internet access.
Okay, lastly, any challenges that we have encountered, particularly when it comes to cooperation? Because even today, the principals have indicated that cooperation is what is required, particularly looking at the NDP-6. Looking at today's Memorandum of Understanding and also any other aspect, have you experienced any challenge as an institution, particularly putting together this MOU, and what have you learned from that process?
I wouldn't call them challenges as such, but getting it right, the meeting point of the requirements of the NHE and MTC, and to meet the requirements of our customers, is how we worked around all our challenges. How do we jointly provide and meet the needs of Namibians as they buy their houses and seek out new lives. How do we do that? So I wouldn't call them challenges. It was joint joint planning, mm-hmm. joint collaboration, mm-hmm. and a meeting place of mutual future needs.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Mr. Octavius Kahia. Thank you for your time. And also,
thank you. Thank you. Right. Thank you very much.
Okay, and now we switch over to other news. Before we do that, let's pause right here and take a short trip to the marketplace. We'll definitely be back shortly. What are your comments perhaps on this development about the partnership between NHC and MTC? Aren't we the same people that complain about internet being very slow within our own homes? So yeah, I guess this is the time for us to also engage and come in and air opinions. Perhaps what is it that you're skeptical about? Because for some people, they say, what if they're interested, they're not interested in other telecommunications company. Well, then I think for me, I would say let those telecommunication companies come on board then and do the same. But nonetheless, we pause right here to take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Please come through, air opinions and contributions.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore satu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now let's get into other news. The second Namibia EU Business Forum wraps up today in Windhoek with discussions centering on how Namibia and the European Union can deepen trade ties through green industrialization and investment. Now, one of the key discussions at the forum featured economist Robin Sherborne, who unpacked the trade trends between Namibia and the EU, highlighting the bloc's role as one of Namibia's leading export markets. The three-day forum held under the theme Towards Stronger, Greener and More Diversified Economies, Catalyzing Business and Trade Opportunities Between the EU and Namibia, brought together government officials, investors and business leaders to explore opportunities in renewable hydrogen, agribusiness, automotive manufacturing and sustainable raw material value chains. Co-hosted by the European Union delegation to Namibia and the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board, NIPDB, the event also included exhibitors, business networking sessions, and the site visits linked to Namibia's growing green economic projects. Now, the European Union remains one of Namibia's top trading partners, with exports to the EU valued at 17.6 billion Namibian dollars in 2025. But before we get into that, actually, let's take a listen to economist Robin Sherborne as he shares on Namibia's economy as a whole. Let's rather take a listen to that.
To put my cards, play open cards with you this morning before I talk. you know, what I'm going to say is based on a report I've written for the EU. The EU has paid me to write this report, but it has not told me what to say in that report. So this is entirely my own work, and I think that speaks very highly in favor of the EU. No one told me what to say in any of the anything I wrote, and nothing I write on the nothing I present to you today will be anything other than my work. So I see myself as an independent freelance economist, not beholden to particular government or commercial interests. I'm an independent voice on the economy. I've followed Namibian economic developments for over 30 years. Yes, I came here in 1991. I was a co-founder of IPPR, co-founder of Insight Namibia magazine. I produce a quarterly economic review for the IPPR. I've written the Guide to the Namibian Economy, the 600-page book I already mentioned. And I run a website called economy.com.na, which people might want to take a look at. So I like to think of myself as an independent voice on the economy who reaches conclusions based on evidence and data. Yeah, there's my associations. So I was absolutely delighted when the EU asked me to update some work I did back in 2024 to cover the years 2024 and 2025, because they didn't attach strings. So I've reached my own conclusions. Okay. I think I've made that pretty clear now. Let me carry on. So in five charts, what I'm going to do today is I'm going to just quickly look at the European Union to make sure we all understand what the European Union is. I'm going to look at the data I'm using to do my analysis. I'm going to look at Namibia's exports, including exports to the UK, to the EU, pardon me, Ambassador. I'm going to look at the trade balance and employment creation. I'm going to look at... And then I'm going to reach my conclusions. That's what I'll do in my 15 minutes. So let me kick off to make sure we all understand what the European Union is. Now, it's an organization of 27 member states. They're all listed there. Very important to note that some major markets in Europe are not members of the EU, and I include Norway, Switzerland, and the UK. So my figures for the EU exclude those countries, which are important markets for Namibia. But the important thing to understand about the EU is that it trades as a single block. It is unique in the world. Nowhere else do 27 countries come together in the same way. There's a common external tariff to the rest of the world. So if you import into the EU through Spain or through Germany, you face the same tariffs. Within the EU, the same product regulations apply to across all countries. The same competition rules apply across all countries. So it is a single market. It's not just a customs union like the one we belong to in Southern Africa. Yeah, so it's quite special. And it's the European Commission in Brussels that has the responsibility for trade issues within the EU. So it's not individual member states. Yeah. So the real question is, because our trade statistics in Namibia are really broken down by country, the question the EU posed to me was, well, how do things look if you aggregate the 27 member states and treat the EU as the single trading bloc it actually is? And that's, in effect, the work I've done today that I'm sharing with you. Just a quick word about data. So I'm using the standard international trade classification data. The last study I did, which was published in 2024, was based on slightly different data measured in US dollars and harmonized system codes. So I'm doing something slightly different in this presentation today. The study uses this CITEC classification and coding of all traded products. And this is a UN system used by countries around the world. So it's not that Namibia is doing something unusual. We're fully in line with the rest of the world. There are 10 commodity groups in this system, from food and live animals to specialized manufactured items. I won't go into too much detail there. It's used by over 200 countries and territories, including ourselves. The trade data I'm using was provided very kindly by colleagues at the Namibia Statistics Agency. They responded very promptly and in great detail to my queries. Thank you, NSA. But they provided an awful lot of information. So the information on exports and imports to and from 220 countries in Namibia dollars over all the categories of the CITEC data constitute a spreadsheet of about 25,000 rows. So The database I'm using has an awful lot of information in it. Don't worry, I won't be going through each row with you today, much as I'd love to. Just a word about exports. The data captures exports to the first destination of whatever that export is. So, for example, if Namibia exports diamonds to Botswana, it's measured as exports to Botswana. What then happens to the diamonds if they go on to India? Oh, yeah, that would be, yeah. Sorry, does this work? Yeah. Thank you. If they then go on to India or the United States or elsewhere, my data doesn't capture that, yeah? So it's the first port of call, essentially. And then secondly, the data I'm using excludes re-exports. So, for example, if copper or cobalt come in from Zambia or the DRC into Namibia and are shipped out through Walvis Bay, I'm excluding that. If they undergo no transformation within Namibia, they're categorized as re-exports, and that's outside of what I've been looking at. And then finally, very importantly, it excludes electricity, and we are part of the SAP, the Southern African Power Pool, so we're trading electricity with the rest of the region, and it excludes services. So I'm not looking at tourism and other services in this study. It's just goods. And, of course, services, we all know Namibia's tourist industry has deep links to the European Union and to the European tourist market, so I'm not looking at that. Okay. And because of brevity, I could have gone into 2024 and 2025 today, but I was only given 15 minutes, so I'm really just looking at the latest year's data. There isn't a huge difference between the two, but there are some differences. I'm just looking at 2025. My report includes data from 2024 as well. Okay, something about the CITEC. I won't dwell on that, but it's all kosher international data I'm using. Let me move on to exports. And this is the first of my charts. Okay, so I'm here looking at Namibia's exports. And I've presented it in a slightly different way to usual. So this is a rectangle, and the area of the rectangle constitutes the total value of exports. So that area is 90.4 billion Namibia dollars. That's the total value of the export of goods in 2025. And within those are the various blocks of the product groups that we export. And you'll see there's uranium here, there's gold here, there's fish products here, there's diamonds here, and there's a whole range of other products here. But I think you'll agree what's striking about this rectangle is the size of four blocks. Basically, the four blocks, uranium, gold, fish, and diamonds. And that's because those are our major export product groups in this country, yeah? Those four groups account for 80% of all our exports by value. They are incredibly important. And therefore, where we export those products to affect the overall trade pattern because they're just so damn big. So the conclusion from that chart is essentially in 2025, uranium, gold, fish, and diamonds accounted for over 80% of all exports to the rest of the world by value out of the 19.4 billion of total exports. So the conclusion from that is our exports in this country are highly concentrated on four product groups. That's exactly the same as my last study, essentially. That hasn't changed for a long period of time. So that's my first chart. Let's move on. Let me say a word about these three very important export products of ours, because it's important to understand the structural constraints in which our exports operate. So let me kick off with diamonds, one of our major export products. Yeah. So we have a company in Namibia, Namdeb Holdings, which consists of on-land operations, Namdeb, and offshore operations, Debmarine Namibia. That's our diamond producer. And that diamond producer sells to Namdia, a government-owned entity in Namibia. 15% by run of production goes to Namdia, which then sells these diamonds abroad in foreign markets directly. And the rest of the diamonds essentially go to De Beers DTC in Botswana for distribution across the world. Yeah. So because we are 50% shareholder of Namdeb, and Namdeb is half-owned by De Beers, we're very much plugged into the De Beers marketing system for diamonds, which isn't going to change from year to year. Yeah. The next one is uranium. So we have a uranium industry, very important. We're the world's third largest uranium-producing country. And our three operating uranium mines
are basically majority or partly Chinese-owned. Yeah, that's I'm not saying that as any sort of criticism, but they are Chinese-owned because for China, these mines produce uranium for strategic long-term purposes. That's why they invested here. So we have the Husab. Sorry, how do I go back? We have the Husab mine opened in. Okay. Husab mine opened in 2016, which was the largest single Chinese investment in Africa at the time, 10% owned by the government. We have Rossing mine and we have Lange Heinrich, of which 25% is owned by the Chinese. But it's important to understand, although these mines do sell to the rest of the world, they're primarily focused on exporting uranium to China. Again, that's not going to change much from year to year. And then thirdly, gold. You saw that in the first chart. Gold was our biggest export by value. Now, we have two operating gold mines, Navajab and Ochikoto. And both of these mines sell their concentrate, so in other words, a sort of processed form of gold, to the Rand gold refinery in South Africa, which is the world's largest, essentially the world's largest gold refinery, sitting on our doorstep in South Africa. So when I come to the export statistics, you'll see why gold and South Africa, just as you'll see why uranium and China and diamonds and Botswana are so important. These are structural things which don't change from year to year. So the conclusion I draw from that is the destination of key exports, diamonds, uranium, and gold, greatly determines the pattern of overall Namibian exports and are not likely to change very much from one year to the next. Okay, let me move on to look in more detail on exports. So what I've done with the data then, I've ranked export markets in 2024 and 2025. You don't need to look in detail at the table to see how the different countries and the EU 27 members compare. And you'll see in both lists from 2024 and 2025, the EU aggregated together comes third in terms of the value of our exports to export markets. So my conclusion from the analysis of these rankings is that Namibia's four top export markets, Botswana, China, the EU, and South Africa, account for over 80% of Namibia's exports. The EU is one of Namibia's most important export markets. In those 2 years, it was third by value. It was the third most important export market by value in 2024 and 2025. So just to reiterate, four products make up 80% of all our exports. Four export markets account for 80% of all our exports. Yeah? Very important to understand that. Let's go into that in a bit more detail. I just want to... chart two. I just want to hammer home this point then. So this is a pie chart of our export markets. And you see there you've got South Africa, China, number one and number two. This is 2025, number one and number two. And then you've got the EU as number three. And I've included some of the member states of the EU there. And then Botswana, US, Zambia, and the rest of the world there in the pie chart. So you see there, increases in uranium and gold prices and declines in diamond prices have affected trade patterns since the last study in 2023. In 2025, the EU was the third most important export market by value, taking up 19.4% of Namibia's exports by value. Within the EU, Namibia trades with all 27 member countries, but six of those member states, Spain, France, the Netherlands, Italy, Belgium, and Germany accounted for 95% of total exports to the EU. So again, within the EU, within our exports to the EU, things are quite concentrated too on six main countries. Chart three, let me move on. Okay, we're looking at a bit more detail now. We're looking at a bit more detail at the composition of our exports to the EU in this chart, yeah? And I'm not here to do down other export markets, to talk them down, no, but I am here to contrast and compare. And I want to just look at those four export markets, which, remember, account for 80% of all our exports, in a little more detail. You don't need to look at the detail of the legends. I think it will become clear. This is our exports to Botswana, and you can see it's a pie chart, and that blue color denotes our diamond exports to Botswana. So in other words, we export a lot to Botswana, yes, but look at the concentration on just the single product, diamonds. I think it's 80 to 90% of all our exports to Botswana are essentially rough diamonds. And that's because of the reasons I explained before. De Beers' DTC is based in Gaborone. Again, our exports to China, our number two export market. Again, the blue here doesn't denote diamonds, but uranium. And I go back to what I told you about Namibia's uranium mines. So between 80 and 90% of all our exports to China are focused on uranium. So again, highly concentrated. And then our third export market that I'm looking at is South Africa. You can see the blue there. It's not diamonds or gold. It's diamonds or uranium. It's gold this time. Gold exports to South Africa account for, you can see, 3/4 of all our exports to South Africa. Now, how does it look for the EU? Well, this is the chart for the EU. And I think you'll agree that the export basket of goods to the EU is far more diversified than to those other major markets. There's fish, a whole range of fish products, uranium, meat products, fruit, high-value fruit, blueberries and table grapes, charcoal, crustaceans, base metals, dimension stones, vegetables, a little bit of diamonds and other products. You see the pie chart stands in quite some contrast to the pie charts to our other four main trading our other three main trading partners. So again, my conclusion there is Namibia exports a more diversified basket of goods to the EU than to other main trading partners, including fish and crustaceans, uranium, meat, fruit, charcoal, diamonds, and base metals. So a diversified basket of goods. Okay, I'll move on. What about jobs created? Okay, I've put together this chart now, which I've called employment due to exports to the EU. And what I've done here is put two... Someone's phone going off. Is that my 15 minutes? Okay. Am I allowed to talk over the alarm? I knew I wasn't going to make 15 minutes. So what I've done here, I've made estimates using the latest available
information. Country. I think that this is...
Okay, let's just get a little bit more practical with those statistics used. I'm speaking about the now EU-Namibia trade partnership continues to drive export growth, and the European Union remains one of Namibia's top trading partners, with exports to the EU valued at 17.6 billion Namibian dollars in 2025. That is according to an independent analysis of the trade data from the Namibia Statistics Agency. Now, the study commissioned by the EU assessed trade flows between Namibia and the EU's 27 member states as a single trading bloc using trade data for 2024 and 2025 measured in Namibian dollars. Now, in a statement accompanying the findings, Anna Beatrice Martens said the partnership between Namibia and the EU has for more than two decades contributed to economic growth, diversification, and employment creation. She noted that the growing trade relationship has also supported the development of markets for products such as high-value fruit and charcoal. And she also had Robin Shebon speaking there. Now, according to the report, Namibia exported goods worth 90.4 billion Namibian dollars, that is in 2025, and the country's exports were heavily concentrated in four key product categories, one being uranium, gold, fish, and diamonds, which together accounted for 80% of the total exports. Now, uranium was Namibia's largest export product at 31.1%, followed by gold at 22%, fish at 17.1%, and diamonds at 11.4%. Now, other export products included meat. This one's now accounted for the remaining 20%. Other export products included meat, fruit, charcoal, live animals, base metals, stone, petroleum products, cement, and copper ore. The report also identified the EU as Namibia's third largest export market after South Africa and China. Namibia exported goods worth 26.6 billion Namibian dollars to South Africa and 22 billion Namibian dollars to China in 2025, while exports to Botswana totaled 9.3 billion Namibian dollars. Now, within the EU, six member states, Spain, France, Netherlands, Italy, Belgium, and Germany account for 95% of Namibia's exports to the EU in 2025. Let's also still take a listen to roundtable discussions, which had also Commissioner of NAMRA, Sam Shivute, speaking at the event. Quite interesting conversation. So let's take a listen shortly.
Fundamentally important. The processes and so on that you may have to deal with are complicated at times, but we speak English in Namibia, but that doesn't mean that you don't need to learn the local language. And that's where speaking to Jessica, you can speak to us, but speaking to Namibians that help you navigate the local language, and I'm not talking brown envelopes. You don't need that to do business in Namibia. You speak to local people who understand the lay of the land, understand how to operate, and you will get things done. It can be a bit frustrating, it can be a bit time-consuming, but you will get things done, and I think that's what's fundamentally important. And then, you know, I think what you see from the panel, but I think what you see in general if you're speaking to people in Namibia, is that there's firstly pragmatism. I think that the fine lady next to me made it very good pragmatic points about value addition. We want to capture value in Namibia, but we have to be realistic about it. And that pragmatism, I think, is very important, and you see a lot of that. And then the desire to improve. I can't say that that's always been there. There was certainly a window where it felt like we were going in the wrong direction. But the last, certainly from 2020 or so, there's been this very clear desire to be better. And, you know, I think the speakers to my left have made that point as well, that we want to move things in the right direction. We want to fix problems where there are problems. We want to be better. And I think that's exactly the type of country that you can invest in.
Thank you. As the Minister of Home Affairs, we are in line with and support the initiatives that business sectors are taking, and we cannot develop our country without investors. And at times it might seem that the application of permits seems to be complicated, but we are working closely with NIPTP in terms of disseminating information and also engage in investors. So we also have a board that approves applications. So if there are rare urgent skills, we are also encouraging the investors to make appointment with the immigration selected board's chairperson, and also have audience with the chairperson, and to just give your give your stake in what you want to invest to, what risks you have, so that the board can consider your application. Normally, it takes more than 2 months to do from the processing to the actual application, but some processes due to agencies can also be fast-tracked. So we are here to assist. We are here to give information. Just approach the ministry, and we will give you all the needed information as to submit.
No, thank you very much. I think what I want to say is that we are in process, and we have started a process of reforming our legislative infrastructure and to reform our institutional arrangement, to modernize it, to meet the demand of investment, economic development. But we are going to uphold the protection of our environment and promote sustainable development, and we are inviting investors to stand with us and work with us on this journey. Thank you.
Thank you. From Namibia Revenue Agency, we call you to please come and invest in Namibia. Our taxation system is very fair. Our taxation system is very predictable. Our taxation system is source-based, and therefore we called you to come and invest in Namibia. In Namibia, the tax rate is going down. We used to be at 32, now we're moving down, we are at 30 now, while others are going up. You will get all your input cost. All your input cost and expenses, you get your refunds. We used to refunds taking up to 90 days, but now the minister have just announced that we need to reduce that time frame between 30 to 60. That was just announced about 2 months ago. Europe and Namibia have always been friends. If you look at our bilateral investment treaty network, we have 8 members country there. Only one country is not from Europe. All the other 7 are from Europe. And what does that BIT, bilateral investment treaty, give you? It protects your investment. It ensures that you can repatriate your capital. It ensures that you can take your cases to international court for adjudication. Your investment is protected and the rule of law is intact in Namibia. If you look at our double taxation agreement network, 11 countries have been contracted with Namibia. 6 of them are all from Europe, and that is to give you benefit. And therefore we are saying, because our taxation regime is so favorable, please, the future of Namibia look very, very bright. Come and invest in Namibia. The time to invest is now. Thank you.
Thank you to the panel. I think that's a perfect way to end it off. And thank you also for all of you for your attention to this panel.
Boxes in theory, but both on a risk and on a return side, we score own goals. Now, I'm not a soccer.
Okay, and with that, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly to stay tuned. This right here is definitely On the Radar News Analysis. We're not going anywhere.
Lipuramenje ni wapuwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nweko dite okoewe ekukurile Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo Ihewe tike kovano hile koshuala Onongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa Mineudo otukwetira o special ange Tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka Otone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM Onora itatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile kumderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu Oma filane Eagle FM DI
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. But before we get to that,
Lipuramenje ni wapuwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nweko dite okoewe ekukurile Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo Ihewe tike kovano hile koshuala Onongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda beyi nawa. Nini uto otukwetera o special ange tashia kengeshe pa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendite nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that?
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
Tell that to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that?
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We start off in South Africa, where exhibitors are showcasing their tourism products at the Africa's Travel in Number happening in South Africa.
We take you to KZN now, where the city of Durban is hosting Africa's Travel Indaba 2026 at the Inkosi Albert Luthuli International Convention Center until tomorrow. African exhibitors are showcasing their tourism offerings to international and local buyers, destination marketing companies, and leisure tourism service partners. The Indaba is one of the largest tourism marketing events on the African calendar, showcasing the widest variety of a continent's best tourism products. SABC News reporter Jed Pulser is in Johannesburg, in Durban, pardon me, for us, and joins us live with the very latest. A very good morning to you, Jade. Yesterday, the president addressed the Africa Tourism Indaba, stating that tourism essentially is the most strategic of sectors when it comes to the African continent, and going on to say that beyond for those continents or those countries on the African continent that might be commodity dependent, this is an opportunity to diversify when you look at tourism.
Well, a very good morning to you, Mfundo. Definitely in the warmest city, Durban, right now. And I'm told it's very cold where you are. But yes, the atmosphere has been electrifying at the 2026 Travel Africa Indaba. And actually where I am now is at the exhibition side. And one of the exhibitions that really caught my eye was the Zambia stall. It is incredibly big, and there's so much to offer here, and it's all about business networking partnerships between not only South Africa but also with other African continents. And we do know that President Cyril Ramaphosa also spoke about those travel packages and making connectivity available for South Africans to travel across the African continent, but also for other countries to come to South Africa. But to speak to us more about the partnership, I am joined by Evans Muhanga, Permanent Secretary of the Zambia Tourism Ministry. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Muhanga. Let's go straight into it. We heard the South African President, Cyril Ramaphosa, speaking about connectivity, spoke about infrastructure, but also placing the African continent on the map and really working together to unify tourism as a sector.
Thank you, Jed, and welcome to the Zambia exhibition stand. Yesterday, I attended that particular conversation as well from His Excellency, the President of the Republic of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, talking about why it is important to look at Southern Africa, to look at Africa as one big market from a tourism point of view. And he went to great length in terms of how tourism should be looked at as an economic sector, creating more jobs, you know, and just making sure that it's bridging the gap in terms of what people know about countries. But more importantly, as you have mentioned, he talked about intra-trade within Africa, intra-travel within Africa, so that South Africa, being where it is at the tip down here, and there are so many long-haul flights that come from other European countries and many other parts of the world to come here and experience South Africa, but we need not to compete because we have got all these unique offerings that you might find in South Africa, but you might not find in Zambia. And what we want now is a situation where when tourists come to South Africa, they can be able to extend into Zambia. And, you know, we are interconnected. There are a lot of transfrontier conservation areas, for example, where our wildlife roams through these countries, through borders. They don't need a visa to be able to move from one country to the other. So some of the things that he talked about also was how governments need to look at visa regimes, relaxing the rules so that we remove the bottlenecks that make people not to travel. And I think that once Africa does that, more tourists, in terms of just the share of the global market of tourists, Africa can also be able to get the best out of that, yeah.
Evans Muhanga, the Permanent Secretary of the Zambia Tourism Industry, thank you so much for speaking to us. And I think that it's going to be very interesting. We also know that there's going to be a SADC a summit that's going to be happening in South Africa, and as a SADC.
Still in South Africa, severe weather classified as a national disaster.
Well, you know, with all the different weather conditions playing out and severe weather across several of our South African provinces, we understand that at this point it may have already claimed about 10 lives. Now, the extreme weather conditions are battering several provinces, and this after, of course, weather warnings were issued by the South African Weather Services, and areas most notably affected the Western and Eastern Cape, with a widespread damage to infrastructure, as we have been reporting. Now, for more on these latest developments, we joined now by the acting head of the National Disaster Management Center, Thabo Kupari. Thanks so much for your time, Mr. Kupari. Welcome to Morning Live.
Good morning, Sakina, and to the viewers. Thank you.
Mr. Kupari, if I can please just ask you just to update us with regard to the latest statistics with regard to the verified fatalities, injuries, and also some of the damage.
Thank you. As we know, that the country has been experiencing weather inclement since from the end of April to date. To date, we have recorded, unfortunately, 17 fatalities across the affected provinces. There is an increase, I can just indicate, 7 in Western Cape, 3 in Northern Cape, 1 in Northwest, 1 in KwaZulu-Natal, and 1 in Free State, and 1 in Mpumalanga. Those are the fatalities. But we have activated our response teams to respond. Fortunately, we have managed to save lives. There are more than, you know, a lot of people who have been rescued. The emergency temporary shelters have been activated, especially in Eastern Cape and Western Cape, to house the people, and they are receiving psychosocial support. We are working very closely with all the organs of state to ensure that we have our people in a safe place.
Mm. Mr. Kupari, we hear from the Western Cape Disaster Management Center, for example, that they are dealing with about 43,000 people who've been adversely affected by the latest inclement weather conditions. And with that said, you know, if we talk about the declaration of a state of disaster, what exactly does it mean? And what does it mean for those people who have been affected?
Take into account the severe weather inclement, the head of the National Disaster Management Center classified the occurrence as a national state of disaster. I must just clarify, Sakina, that there's a difference between declaration and classification. Mm. The classification aims to confirm that indeed we are in a state of disaster, but it also enables other organs of state to reprioritize in response to to the ordeal or the occurrence that has happened. The declaration is when we have to bring extraordinary measures like introducing new regulations to manage the disaster. So the legislation and policies that are in place are able to assist us to respond effectively to the occurrence.
So in terms of the affected communities, what sort of relief can they expect as a result of these new implementations?
We are working not alone with the business sectors at the municipal level and provincial level. The NGOs, they are receiving psychosocial support. They have received relief such as your blankets, food, hot meals in some areas where they are left homeless. But the intention is to move forward to look into the areas where they are staying, working together as government to ensure that if needs be that they need to be relocated, it must be happened.
Mm. So we know of some NGOs who are on the ground actively doing a similar sort of job. Is there any collaboration between government and those NGOs in order to amplify the relief efforts that you're trying to put forward, Mr. Kupari?
Yes, there is a collaboration. These NGOs are working very closely with the Department of Social Development. They are supporting each other to ensure that we give relief to the affected communities. As we know that government cannot do it alone, we need the NGOs, we need all the partners to be able to respond effectively.
Mm. And Mr. Kupari, you did mention some of the immediate measures like the psychosocial support, and one would imagine things like warm clothes, blankets and the like. But of course, in the long term, people need to rebuild their lives. And this is where, the tar hits the road, so to speak. So in terms of that, how long will it take? And also, how will you actually manage that process going forward? Also, just in terms of the provinces, will it be everyone going at the same time, or will certain provinces be prioritized based on the severity of the disruptions that they have seen?
This is a multidisciplinary approach. In terms of housing, the human settlement is already on site. We had a National Joint Flood Coordinating Committee yesterday, where we received reports that they are already in all these provinces making assessments to ensure that the emergency temporary units are allocated to the affected communities.
And I guess South Africans in the main will always worry about mismanagement and malfeasance creeping in at times like these. So what mechanisms do you have in place to ensure that these emergency funds and disaster relief grants are not lost through procurement inefficiencies or corruption?
These funds are special grants meant for emergencies. So we're closely monitoring with them. We have a multidisciplinary task team which is doing administrative oversight, working very closely with AGSA, National Treasury, all other relevant stakeholders are part of this process. We will be monitoring, going to the sites on monthly basis, receiving reports and quarterly reports, doing verifications that indeed the money was used to where it's supposed to.
And just with regard to the funds that are needed by the various municipalities, reaching them expeditiously, how are you going to ensure that? Because we know sometimes processes in government can be cumbersome.
We have the process. Currently, some of the areas are still not accessible due to the level of water that are still there. But an assessment process has kick-started to those areas that are accessible, but we will continue to do that until we have covered all the areas. From there, we will do the verification process to ensure that the infrastructure that is reported to have been destroyed by the floods indeed it is, before funding is allocated to those municipalities. From there, There's monthly committees that are receiving reports and also do, simultaneously doing verification on site to ensure that there's progress. The grants that we have, the response grants, the implementation period that is given is 6 months, and the recovery grant goes from 12 months to 3 years. These are the for the projects that will not be able to finish them within a 6 month period.
And just a final question, Mr. Kupari. I know, as you said, you've just kick-started the process, but are you able to give us any sort of guesstimate at this point as to what the amount of damage is likely to look like?
Unfortunately, yeah, one cannot be exact, but the impact on the ground is huge. It's amounting to billions. I'll give you an example, Sakina. In the previous financial year, Department of Cooperative Governance through the National Disaster Management Center allocated more than 3 billion to 140 municipalities which were affected by disaster. So we're looking at around...
And before we proceed, we give you some traffic advisory regarding the IUM winter convocation happening in Ongwediva. The International University of Management, IUM, is proud to announce a historical milestone as it hosts its first ever winter convocation in northern Namibia. Now, the ceremony will take place on Friday, the 15th of May, 2026, at the Ongwediva Trade Fair Center and is expected to attract a large number of graduates, families and dignitaries. Members of the public are advised to expect increased traffic volumes in and around Ongwediva, particularly near the Trade Fair Center between 6 a.m. and 15 p.m. on the day of the event. Now, if you'll be attending, please do take note that gates will open at 6 a.m. and will strictly close at 7 a.m. No entry will be permitted after 7 a.m. Now, guests are also informed that babies and toddlers will not be permitted inside the venue, and attendees are encouraged to plan their journey in advance, arrive early, and join IOM in celebrating this memorable occasion. The public is urged to exercise patience and caution in order to ensure the safety of all road users during this important occasion. IUM extends its heartfelt congratulations to all graduates and looks forward to celebrating this memorable event together. Thank you for your cooperation. Now we move over to market updates within South Africa. Let's take a listen.
Welcome back and thanks for staying with us. Asian stocks found their footing as investors weigh a waning AI rally against inflation fears and rising oil prices. Markets also followed a retreat on Wall Street. The Nikkei in Japan up 0.8% higher at 63,272. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng is up 0.1% at 26,376. And the Shanghai Composite Index up 0.6% at 4,242. The S&P 500 closed slightly higher on Monday, the 11th of May, with AI optimism fueling upward momentum, even as the earnings-driven fervor of the recent rally eased in the home stretch of reporting season and as crude prices rose, stoking inflation worries as U.S.-Iran peace negotiations stalled. Semiconductors outshine other sectors as artificial intelligence-related momentum continued unabated, with chip makers outperforming the broader market. First quarter reporting period is nearing the finish line, with 440 of the companies in the S&P 500 having reported of those 83% have topped earnings expectations. That's according to the LSEG IBS. As of Friday, the 8th of May, analysts estimated first quarter S&P 500 earnings growth on aggregate of 28.6% year on year. That's nearly double the 4.4% first quarter growth estimates as of April 1st. But As earnings season nears the finish line, focus returns to macroeconomics and geopolitical developments. President Donald Trump dismissed Iran's response to a U.S. peace proposal, causing crude prices to spike and stoking concerns that a prolonged conflict will keep putting upward pressure on inflation, particularly at the gasoline pump, where consumers are feeling the pinch. On that point, investors will pay close attention to economic indicators this week, particularly the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index and the retail sales report from the Commerce Department, scanning the data for signs that the ongoing surge in energy prices is metastasizing into broader inflation or affecting consumer spending. Producer prices and industrial output are also on this week's economic calendar. Later this week, President Trump is due to meet his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in Beijing for talks covering a broad range of issues, including the Iran war, trade, nuclear weapons, Taiwan, artificial intelligence, and possible extension of a critical rare earth minerals deal. The S&P 500 gained 13.91 points or 0.919% to end at 7412.84 points, while the Nasdaq composite gained 27.05 points or 0.1010% to 26,274.13. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 95.31 points or 0.19% to 49,704.47. Companies slated to report this week include tech networking giant Cisco and semiconductor equipment maker Applied Materials, while heavyweights NVIDIA and Walmart are due to report later in the month.
Let's talk about how digital tools are reshaping healthcare delivery within Africa.
In Africa, we carry 24% of the global disease burden, and yet we are home to only 3% of the global healthcare workforce. When that is our reality, then we really do have to look at how can we make sure that we are making full use of the limited human resource for health that we have available. Many of our African countries, aside from the shortage of specialists, they'll be based in urban areas. And yet our populations are out in the rural areas. So by leveraging technology, it becomes possible to connect specialists with frontline healthcare workers so that there's that knowledge transfer, there's that hand-holding, there's that virtual mentorship so that patients can be seen as close to their communities as possible. We talk about moving knowledge instead of moving people, so that if patients can be seen as close to their communities as possible, it saves a lot of time, a lot of energy, transportation. Prevention is better than cure. It's cheaper, it's more cost effective.
DRC was so fortunate that President Tshisekedi, after he came to power in 2019, he started talking about universal health coverage and digital transformation. We had a presidential program talking about universal health coverage and digital transformation. So the president himself was very involved in day-to-day basis on following up how we are transforming our health system. One of the first challenges is electricity. Electricity is not very permanent in all the facility, so you have to find different investments on permanent electricity. So that's one of the challenges. The other challenge is the quality of internet connectivity, because for real-time data, you need permanent internet connectivity or very stable. That's also one of the challenge. The third challenge is human resources. The human resources capacity is very low. That's why the government is also investing in training the health workers on using different digital platform.
People are receiving services, and that information starts to move. Who provides approval that Dr. X, clinician Y, can access this information? And so this is going to be very, very key that consent mechanisms are built in, and that ownership of data stays with the individual, and that they're the ones saying, yes, I want to opt into your telehealth service. I give you approval to access my data and to share it with X provider across borders.
Right now, as we speak, we are leading on a project that's working with national public health institutes on collaborative surveillance to make sure that disease outbreaks can be identified as early as possible, they can be reported as quickly as possible, they can be contained as quickly as possible.
Cameroon business owners eye solar solutions.
The spread of hantavirus on border.
As power crisis.
Life has not been the same for the past few months for Yabo Sani, a tailor and dressmaker at the Yelwa market in Garowa. He is no longer able to work or satisfy his customers due to the recurring power cuts.
I have a tailor workshop, but it's not up and running at the moment. Why isn't it working? Because we need electricity, but we don't have any. We only get electricity for maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. So it's really difficult to work under these conditions.
This is the tough reality shared by all the businesses at the market and the surrounding areas.
The customer, what the customer needs is very difficult. Very difficult, why? Because you cannot do everything. You cannot wash the head, you cannot use the hair dryer because there is no light, and we don't know how to do again, because this situation is going now around 3 months. With what is going on now, I cannot even work again. My business is stopped, and I have to check and look another way to try to satisfy my customers.
All our products are damaged. Just look at the state of the fish. They are no longer presentable. Under these circumstances, we are losing a great deal. Some products simply become unsellable. There are goods that we are forced to set aside, a situation that has been going on for nearly 3 months. We are really disappointed.
The Lagdo Dam, built between 1978 and 1984, supplies three northern regions with a capacity of 82 megawatts. Its purpose was hydroelectric power generation, flood control, and irrigation. Standing 40 meters high and 297 meters long, the dam has for some years now been unable to meet 80% of its goals.
In 2021 and 22, we faced the most critical deficit from this side. So actually, what we are facing as load shedding, it is just because the lagdo, due to water, cannot generate a high level, and actually the level of water is too low, and we are managing to avoid a crack within this month of May.
According to experts, the dam is no longer able to...
Admittedly, the power station is over 40 years old. But I would like to reassure you that all four turbines are operational and capable of generating power at their rated capacity. Maintenance work is carried out on a regular basis. However, what is currently limiting production is the low water level. The water shortage means we are unable to bring all four turbines online.
As a contingency plan, Eneo has built a diesel-fired power station in Garowa to supply electricity to the northern regions for the next few months. Unfortunately, these plans are not enough. Experts recommend solar power for a region that enjoys sunshine for 9 months out of the year.
Getting around town hasn't been easy for some time now. When there is no electricity, we are sometimes forced to use generators, but these machines run on fuel, which has become very expensive. We don't know which way to turn. Given that the region has the Lagdo Dam, we would like to have a stable electricity supply. There is often talk of silting at Lagdo, but we should also consider other sources of energy. Here in northern Cameroon, we have plenty of sunshine.
For now, Cameroonian authorities have moved to take control of the main electricity provider. As the communities continue to call for diversified power supply that would end the extended outages. Beryl Oro, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Algeria and Tunisia deepen gas ties.
This is not a new relationship. Algeria has long been one of Tunisia's main gas suppliers, making energy cooperation a core part of ties between the two neighbors.
Algeria is Tunisia's leading gas supplier, and electricity generation in Tunisia depends heavily on its neighbor Algeria, which makes this a truly strategic relationship. In the context of wars and tensions, especially in the energy-producing regions, it is becoming increasingly important for African countries, and North African countries in particular, to strengthen their partnerships in the energy sector and expand cooperation in energy production.
For Algeria, this fits a broader role as a major regional producer. Through Sonatrach, it positions itself as a reliable supplier, making its energy ties with Tunisia part of a wider regional energy security framework.
Algeria has strong assets that position it to play a key role in ensuring stable and reliable energy supplies thanks to its natural resources, strategic location, and advanced infrastructure.
That cooperation is also built on infrastructure. The Transmed pipeline crossing Tunisia remains a major energy corridor between North Africa and Europe, giving Tunisia a strategic transit role in helping move Algerian gas to European markets.
Europe has a tremendous need to import natural gas to satisfy its industrial and residential needs. When Europe looks south across the Mediterranean Sea, it's going to find Algeria, which is the first natural gas producer in Africa. However, Algeria is not geographically the closest point to Europe. When you look east, however, to Tunisia, there is a very interesting pipeline called Transmed that is able to carry over 30 billion cubic meter per year to deserve Italy and Slovenia.
The broader picture is one of continuity. Algeria supplies gas, Tunisia remains both a market and a transit route.
And that now brings us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Peniambeko Jonas. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye, and I'll see you again next time.